Hey there, freaks. It's your boy Marty Bent here to introduce this week's episode of Rabbit Hole Recap. Matt and I just had an incredible rip. Drank some Michters. Talked about some stuff. I think you guys are going to like it. This episode of Rabbit Hole Recap was brought to you by the Cash App. You freaks already know all about them. They're letting you do many things. All right. You get their boost program. You get their boost card. You put your signature on it. You personalize it. You get that. And then you activate your boost when you go to their partner merchants. I used it at the grocery store the other day. Saved $5. On top of that, they're letting you stack sats. Okay. You can stack sats. You can receive sats. You can send sats. You can sell sats. Not recommended, but you can if you want to. All right. And they just teased it. Miles Suter from the Cash App teased that they're about to make sats the standard, and they're going to add auto buys for you freaks. It's a feature you guys have been waiting for. It got teased today. I don't have it yet. Can't confirm it. Seems like it's coming though. And then on top of that, they have Cash App investing. Not a great day to buy stonks, or maybe it is if you're buying dips. You can buy stonks now on the Cash App via Cash App investing. All right, if your favorite stonk is a little too expensive, Cash App is letting you buy as little as $1. All right, you can stack slivers of stonks now. And because Cash App is connected to your bank account, there's no 4 to 5 day waiting periods. You can buy that shit right away. All right, Cash App Investing is a subsidiary of Square, a member SIPC, and as always, use the code STACKINGSATS.
You should probably listen to the end of the episode before you consider stacking stonks, though.
Yeah, definitely listen to the end of the episode. use the code STACKINGSATS when you download the Cash App. You're going to get $10, and $10 is going to go to our good friends at Owls Lacrosse. You know what? Maybe Al isn't such a dirtbag. He actually sent me an owl.
Sent him a fucking owl. It's a fucking, oh my god,
it's an owl. Yeah, I've got an owl here from Al. All right, use the code stacking sats. You're gonna get $10, and $10 is gonna go our friends at Owls Lacrosse. And it seems like Al's turning into a nice guy. All right, the whiskey burp there. This episode is also brought to you by our friends at Unchained Capital. They're doing incredible things, creating financial services for Bitcoiners. All right, I actually opened up a vault this week. The process is seamless. The combination of their walkthrough process and caravan makes you comfortable throughout the whole process. I felt completely comfortable setting up a vault this week. So basically the vault is you have 2 of 3 keys where you can use a Ledger or a Trezor. They're working on cold card. You hold 2 keys. Unchained holds 1. And if you ever need them to sign, they will sign for you. On top of that, they have their collateralized loan product. All right, friends don't let friends sell Bitcoin. If you want to get some liquidity and you don't want to sell Bitcoin, you can get a collateralized loan. You put Bitcoin up, you get cash. You just pay back that loan, you keep your Bitcoin. All right, on top of that, they're doing a bunch of open source stuff, including Caravan, which is mentioned earlier, Slip39, Hermit, and they have their incredible blog series. Go check it out, unchained-capital.com, unchained-capital.com. Enjoy the episode.
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Hey there, freaks. It's your boys, Marty and Matt. Back here for another edition of Rabbit Hole Recap. How we doing, Matt?
Convinced Marty to drink whiskey with me, so that's good.
Well, the Michters, it's hard to turn down. I enjoyed a couple glasses during the Fury-Wilder fight over the weekend.
It feels like a Michter's kind of week.
It does. It does. A lot going on. Before we jump into the topics, we'll talk about the price. Price has fallen a bit this week. Matt's feeling bullish, so it might fall a little bit further.
Right, Sats are my safe haven.
According to Clark Moody's Bitcoin dashboard, we're currently at $8,872. What other stats we're going to get at here? Tor capacity on Lightning going down. Definitely going down. I think we're at 39.5 last week, 39.3%.
Massive drop.
Massive drop. Clark added a new section to this, mining economics. with average fees and average fees versus subsidy. Right now, fees versus subsidy is pretty low, 1.44%. Average fees per block are 0.18 BTC. The halving is coming up, still estimated to be happening on May 9th of this year. We're 10,746 blocks away, and the average block time this period is right around 10 minutes and 1 second. It's getting right by the target that Satoshi set out there. What other stats do we want to look at here? I think that's it. We got a lot to talk about this week. Should we start with the gossip of the week?
We're gonna add the ads after.
Yeah, we'll add them after. We already said it. We added it after. We'll just talk about Cash App in the show.
Fucking Trace, man. Is that where we're gonna start?
I mean, that's the gossip of the week. So that's apparently,
the gossip of the week.
Tone Vase had his unconfiscatable conference over the weekend in Vegas. A bunch of Bitcoiners were there. American HODL took to the Twitter airwaves to announce that he spent some time with Trace, and Trace handed him a piece of paper that was shilling Mimblewimble coin, and he thinks it's going to surpass Bitcoin.
Which none of us had ever heard of, even.
Never heard of it.
The bottom of the barrel shitcoin.
Is it a fork or grin?
It is, yeah, presumably. With a huge pre-mine. It's got like a 50% pre-mine. And honestly, the website reads like Trace fucking wrote it. Like, it's talking about like HODLers of last resort and stuff. So wouldn't be surprised if he holds like a chunk of that pre-mine. But like, Trace has been bothering me lately, as all the freaks know, to begin with. Because first he shilled Ballet Crypto, which we called him out on. And because Ballet Crypto pre-generates your keys before they send them to you, and not your keys, not your coins. So it seems super reckless to promote it. So I didn't understand that. And then he went on this whole tour where he was talking shit about
coin joins.
Yeah, and coin joins and no KYC. He was basically repeating like Nouriel's narratives, right? He was saying, if you use a non-KYC service to buy your Bitcoin, like, you're connected to terrorists and North Koreans, he would say. And like, he said the same thing about CoinJoin users, like CoinJoin users. So he was like, inherently, he was pitching that users were criminal. Users seeking privacy were criminal, even though companies like Chainalysis, who are in the business of overstating these numbers, even they say that what their number was like 11% of CoinJoin use is connected to illicit activity. And you would expect them to overstate it. So it's probably even less than that. But meanwhile, he's going on this whole roadshow where he's talking about it. He's talking to regulators in Wyoming, and I'm just like imagining him in the room, you know, like laughing with the regulators, saying that like Bitcoiners who use CoinJoin and no KYC are terrorists and stuff. And then, so that made no logic to me. I was really disappointed in that. And that's, but it all kind of makes sense when you find out he's shilling this, you know, this privacy-focused shitcoin.
Yeah, I think Ty Kawamoto, good friend of the show, made a good comment on this in reference to Trace's poo-pooing of coin joins. Don't coin join because exchanges are afraid that the government will get mad as extremely cypherpunk. It's just completely against the ethos.
It's not even that, because fuck you, Trace. Like, if... like we
speak into the mic.
Even if you don't want it for yourself... even if you don't want, you don't think your risk profile tolerates, you know, seeking better privacy when using Bitcoin, you don't have to. You could just be quiet about it. You don't have to go around FUDing it and trying to stop other users from using it. And then the second thing is like, if regulators, if he convinces regulators that coin joining should be a criminal act and that non-KYC is a criminal act. Like, what do you think the regulators are going to do about someone who's, like, pumping a privacy-focused shitcoin? Like, how is... any if there's a CoinJoin ban, there'll be a ban on any, all privacy-focused stuff. Any shitcoin that offers privacy.
Yeah. It's a...
So it doesn't even make logical sense.
Yeah, it's not logically consistent at all. And hey, I don't want to talk shit on anybody particularly here.
I do.
But it... I mean, it is disheartening to see somebody who markets himself as a HODLer of last resort and has been doing incredible stuff for Bitcoin.
But he was never really, like, he was shilling shit in the past too. Like, he was shilling PIVX at one point. I think he was shilling Dash at one point. Also, you know, huge shit coins.
I forgot about PIVX.
But this is, like, the low of the low. I mean, this is, like, he's probably, like, one of, like, the five holders of Mimblewimble coin.
Yeah, this is
And he, like, printed it out on these little sheets of paper and, you know, and it was, like, good money, 100x gains.
Yeah, promised 100x gains.
He's, like, pretty... passing it to people.
Promising 100x gains is pretty unethical. And I think Francis Paulette pulled up the chart and crashed precipitously over the weekend, too.
But in order, I'm way more triggered by all of his anti-privacy rhetoric. Like, specifically, there was, like, a video interview of him during Unconfiscatable. And he said specifically, he said, users of non-KYC, why would you pay 10% over a spot to buy terrorist Bitcoin? and then laughed. He just laughed like it just the laugh really triggered me. There's no place for that.
Yeah, it's again, it's disheartening to see. You hate to see it.
Privacy isn't criminal.
It's definitely not criminal. It should be protected at all cost. And like we said many times on this podcast, KYC AML does more harm than good. Like you're intentionally cattle herding people into practices that do not protect their data.
And this is the guy who's like sitting with regulators and like helping craft all this regulation in Wyoming. You know, you got to keep that in mind. And then the other thing is, like, if he had fucking an ounce of integrity, like, he would respond to all of the criticism that's going on right now. He's just been completely radio silent. He's just ignoring the whole fucking thing. You know, like, you already have no fucking integrity left for fudding privacy, Bitcoin privacy, and then shilling this shitcoin project at the same fucking time secretly, like, not even saying it publicly. And then, like, you're not going to come up and defend your actions. Like, if he means it in good faith, like, if we're truly misunderstanding him, which we're fucking not, like, he should come out and defend himself. He should, like,
I think that proves that there's not really anything to defend. There's no leg to stand on there, man. It is, but it's a great example of something we say a lot on the show. Don't have heroes in this space. Don't ever trust us. And then if you do have heroes, sometimes you're going to have to kill them.
As is tradition. This is just, it happens every cycle, huh?
Yeah, it is crazy. Is this like the rage quit before the massive bull run?
Doesn't seem like a rage quit.
It seems like a silent rage quit.
It's more like a Roger move or a...
Yeah, it's not a Mike Hearn rage quit.
No, because Mike Hearn, like, went to R3. And also, like, I don't think anyone thinks, like...
It's like Vinny Lingham level.
Trace isn't selling all of his Bitcoin, right? He's not.
I hope not, for his sake. Yeah. That was,
Fuck that shit, though.
That was gossip talk. Not even gossip. It's real. It's not gossip. I mean, that shit happened. No, it is fucked up.
It definitely happened. He definitely was passing the paper. Especially since he hasn't... First of all, we had, like, reliable sources tell us that was the case. And then, not only that, he hasn't defended himself. And regardless of all of that, he's been on air multiple times trying to paint Bitcoin users as criminals. And go fuck himself for that alone.
I think this is a good segue into this topic, which we have further down the list.
Oh, one more thing. Sorry. Apologies. Mimblewimble coin is only on one really shitty exchange. It's like Hotbit or something it's called. And it got 51% attacked. So there are activist miners out there. You know, I've been waiting for something similar to happen to Bcash
after the weekend.
Bcash has to be, yeah, it was like yesterday it happened.
Boss, yeah, 50% pre-mine. Pretty sure there was an airdrop involved too.
I think it dropped like 80% yesterday or something.
It's got all the makings of a shitcoin.
It's a straight pump and up. It's like it's absolute bottom of the barrel shitcoin.
Yeah, it's like.
There's different levels of shitcoin.
Yeah, and this one is like the prototypical Bitcoin has these flaws, my shitcoin fixes it.
Right, and also let me go around for 6 months and FUD about those flaws and make them like fearmonger as much as possible about the flaws and then buy my shitcoin.
Yes, please. Please buy my shitcoin. Don't ever buy the shitcoins, freaks. There's scammers everywhere. Everyone's a scammer, and they're all trying to get your Bitcoin. Perfect segue into a topic that's further down the list, but might as well put it up. Next to this topic, Whirlpool usage just broke last month's all-time high.
Yes.
You've been...
Who's the sexy creature who made that graph?
That was you. I mean...
There you go.
What happened to staying humble, all right?
Staying humble. Well, you know, the freaks want to dump, so...
So...
No humble Matt today.
When did you...
2 days ago, I think.
2 days ago, so there's still 4 days left of the month.
Right.
At that point.
And it already broke the all-time high that it hit last month.
Yeah, so last month, all-time high was 356.65 Bitcoin across all pools. As of 2 days ago, in February, it hit 368.05 BTC with the 50 million SAT and 5 million SAT pools growing and the 1 million SAT pool falling quite a bit.
Yeah, it's important to realize that they're low, but they're growing.
Yes. Right? Yes.
And today, mobile mixing actually got released. So
yeah,
you can just install the Samurai app, and then you can just scan your Dojo QR code, and you're up and running Whirlpool, coin joins, with no computer. You don't need a computer. You just need a node. A node and a phone.
Yeah.
And you could do it without the Dojo node, but then you're sending your XPubs to their server, so you should really be. And then so they can, if they were malicious or if someone got into the server, they could connect the addresses to each other. So ideally, you want to run your own node. Just in all cases, when with Bitcoin privacy is concerned, you want to be running your own node. But Dojo's nice in that it's very Uncle Jim compatible. So you can easily, all your friends and family have to do to connect to your node is just scan your QR code.
I liked your CK Bunker Uncle Jim meme the other week.
How good was that?
That was a good one.
Dude, CK Bunker has just got me going because you could use it in coin join situations and lightning situations in addition to just regular multisig. And those are both, you know, with these new coin join implementations and obviously with lightning, like you have hot wallets. We have like hot wallets that were keeping larger amounts of Bitcoin in than we have in the past. So it'd be nice to be able to use something like CK Bunker and make them warm.
Yeah. No, I had a big Bitcoin week for your boy, making a lot of wallets, cleaning a lot. I use Wasabi. The point I'm trying to get to, Wasabi and Cold Card together, fucking incredible.
Yeah, I really like the hardware wallet interface.
Yeah. It makes it a lot easier. And again, practice makes perfect. I hadn't made a PSBT in probably a month or two. And it sort of came back pretty naturally. It was like riding a bike, it felt like, the way they have it set up.
I played with Fully Noted this week, Fully Noted 2. And they also use PSBTs. It's a slick interface. It's really user-friendly, but also great for advanced user, you know?
Yeah.
Like it shows you all the information you want to see there. It easily creates a multi-sig wallet where one key is your node, one key is your phone, and one key is your paper wallet that they give you through the phone. So there's obviously some security and privacy trade-offs because it's running through an iPhone. But in terms of like accessibility for an average user to be able to use their own node in multi-sig, and craft transactions using PSBT, we're close. It seems like really, really close.
A dream is coming together, freaks. And then other Bitcoin usage this week.
We needed to
correct
the guys
something.
From Fully Noted reached out to us last week. It looks like Christopher Allen and Blockchain Commons did a lot more work on Fully Noted than we thought when we first spoke. Fontaine, who's the developer behind Fully Noted 1, mainly focused on the
server side, right?
Yeah, the computer app. They have this app called Standup where you just run it on your computer and it automatically runs a Bitcoin node and configures it all through Tor for you and gives you that QR code that you can just scan. I love the connecting to a node with just scanning a QR code.
I'm going to make QR codes great again, freaks.
Yeah, and so Blockchain Commons is taking donations.
btcpay.blockchaincommons.com.
Yeah, so if you like it, do that. But right now it's testnet only, so go play with it. Contribute back if you're capable. Even just bug reports, stuff like that, is always very helpful.
Yes, the more eyes, the better. And then, yeah, I guess we'll wrap up our toying around with Bitcoin products this week. Disclaimer, these guys are a sponsor, but I did set up a vault for inheritance this week with Unchained, and their vault onboarding process was pretty seamless. It was very easy, very comfortable. I was able to confirm my redeem scripts by myself using Caravan, basically verify my pub keys and stuff like that as well using Caravan. It was very very slick, very easy, very good onboarding process. Unchained also had a happy hour here in New York this week. It was a great time. Great to see some Bitcoiners out there. And talking to Parker and Will and Joe Kelly. It seems like they have a lot of cool stuff up their sleeve.
Yeah, I was bummed I missed that.
Yeah, you were missed. You were missed. Always good when Bitcoiners get together, drink some beers, and talk about multisig.
But, yeah, Caravan's a fucking game changer.
Yeah.
I love it.
And just like from a UX perspective, it's very straightforward, very easy to use. So shout out to the Unchained team. This was something that dropped right after we recorded last week, and somebody we've been talking about a lot in the last few weeks is our boy 6102 Bitcoin. Dropped some infographics on Taint chain analysis. Yeah, I think I teased this last week that it was coming out, and then dropped like immediately after. And block listing. He's got some nice infographics that sort of explain how some chain analysis companies define Taint and explains why that's subjective and sort of isn't logically consistent if you're
these infographics are just dope.
Yeah, it goes through different types of coin joins too. So
yeah, and like what the chain analysis company sees and how they might interpret it, and you should definitely check them out.
Yeah.
The link we gave you it's 6102bitcoin.com/projects. You have to scroll down. Make sure you scroll down to the infographics section.
Yeah, he's got a thread on Twitter too. Another big announcement this week. The boys at ZBD, the gaming company.
This is fucking awesome.
Andre Nevis is a big contributor to the BitDevs here in New York. He usually takes the Lightning section and runs with it since Willow Byrne has left us to Austin, to better pastures in Austin. But yeah, so ZBD is the gaming company that Andre is co-founder of, and they basically announced this week they have a developer dashboard in Unity SDK, so a developer kit. And so basically they're making it easy for indie game developers or large game developers to insert sats into their games. And so they've built this developer kit and then a dashboard from which gaming developers can track what's going on in their games and how stuff's moving around. So it seems like it's a good step forward towards creating like a native currency across the globe for gaming.
One step closer to sats becoming the standard.
One step closer. So what are your thoughts on that? I mean, I know you're hot on
massive.
Gaming. I wrote about it on the Bent this week. And
I'm going to be super overly bullish about it.
You almost ratioed me when you answered my question.
Gaming is gambling.
Yeah.
Is it though? Shitty returns. It is.
Explain that.
Well, that's why I love gaming and gambling. I mean, they're one in the same base. With gaming, you're putting in time and money, and you're getting something in return.
It's usually vanity stuff,
though. Yeah, in most games, it's just bullshit vanity. But like, if you could get money in return, then it would be better. That's my thesis.
How do we get this in the esports world? Like all these tournaments that we see.
I think it will just naturally. Well, first of all, SDKs like this are fucking huge because we don't want the game developers don't have to be Bitcoiners.
No.
Right? They should just be able to plug it in. And that's what ZBD is doing,
yeah.
Which that's why it's fucking huge. But I think we will see up and coming studios, you know, smaller gaming companies will integrate this stuff first, and they will prove out the model. And I think gamers will gravitate towards games that do have, you know, an open currency system in place, you know, Bitcoin, they have sats. So you can actually move, you know, get financial return and move it out of the game. It's not just stuck in these closed gardens. But the thing is, the game developers like their walled gardens, right? They don't want you to, Fortnite would prefer if your V-Bucks are stuck on Fortnite because then you can't go spend it on a competing game.
Or go spend it at a bodega.
Right, exactly. So that's why those big the big franchises and the big studios, they're not going to implement it first. But as gamers start to, same idea with Fortnite. Fortnite was the first AAA major title to go the freemium model. Mm-hmm. So it's completely free to play. But all those vanity stuff, like the skins and everything, you have to buy.
Dance moves.
And now we see tons of other AAA titles moving to the free model with paid content. And everyone said that was never going to happen, but all it took was Fortnite being a smashing success. And then they had no choice. Yeah. That's what the customer demanded.
Yeah, and it's multifaceted too. So not only is the customer going to get sats and be able to make sats on the game for these indie developers that aren't as big as the Fortnites yet, it's a good way for them to monetize their products too, within game paywalls and stuff like that. And that's been a problem for the indie gaming industry, from what I can tell. Again, I'm not a huge gamer these days, but ZBD wrote it in their Medium post where they announced this SDK that this could also be used for these indie gamers to help monetize.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why we see so many shitty mobile games. Right, where they have like
a bunch of ads,
it's like pay to win, stuff like that.
Yeah, and then so if you freaks don't remember, Andre was with Koala Studios before they dissolved, and this was their dream to build a developer kit, and it seems like Andre's taken that to ZBD and brought it to fruition. So shout out to ZBD, shout out to Andre and team. You guys are putting the team on your back. I got something in my throat.
Sats will be the standard in gaming. Just makes too much sense.
Right.
Super bullish.
Especially the global nature of gaming, right? Just being able to send it all around the world, not to worry about conversion costs or anything.
I'm on like a 12-year-old kid in Thailand to spawn camp me and get paid for it. That's all I want. I don't think that's too much to ask for it.
But are people going to want to like spend their sats?
Yeah. I spend way too much. I've like my lifetime, the amount of money I've spent on games, I don't want to talk about, like, it's too much, right? So like why should the developer be the only one who makes that money? It's just you're just splitting up how much of that money the developer gets, and some of it goes to better players than you.
Yeah, that's true. If you don't want to spend your sats though, Casa, they announced their inheritance
this is interesting
product this week. So
3 of 6 keys. One key goes to a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
One key goes to your heir. What is the setup?
You have a key on your phone. You have a key. You have a key on your phone.
Two keys held by the user. One key is held by the heir. Right, I got that right. One key is in a safe deposit box, and one key is held by Casa.
Yes.
The safe deposit key is passed to the heir.
Once you die.
Through like the normal estate process, like a lawyer will pass the safe deposit access and then the heir can grab it from there.
Yes.
So then the heir has two keys, and they combine that key with Casa's key to have three keys, and then they have the quorum to spend 3 of 6.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting setup.
Very interesting setup, and something that's been desperately needed in the space. Inheritance is something more recently that I've been freaking out more about. It's something that really doesn't come to your mind until you have to think about it. And it's been on the top of my mind recently. And I'm happy that these products are coming to market. And again, it's this stuff, like everybody likes to, it's too hard to use. Nobody's technical enough to use this stuff. Yeah, right now, but just wait. Things are getting better.
Well, what I like about this is, like, it doesn't really require the heir to be that technical. The heir just knows they have to protect that one key they have, which is, in Casa's case, they go seedless, so it's either a treasure or a ledger, and in the near future, it should be a cold card. So they keep this one hardware wallet safe. They remember the PIN for that, and they just know that they're... And Casa's going to walk them through it in that situation, because Casa has one key as well. It's weird to shill my own project, but...
Now, we were talking about this before we
hit record. This is like exactly the type of setup that I envisioned Final Message being useful for, finalmessage.io, which is that one key that's held in the user safe deposit box, you could put that key in a final message, encrypt it, email it to the recipient, and then that way it just acts as redundancy. So even if Final Message... The main trust issue with Final Message is you have to trust us to actually send the email. when the time comes. With the this setup, the one issue is you have to trust the lawyer to be able to, you have to trust the lawyer to and the legal system to actually transfer ownership of the safe deposit box to the heir. And you also have to trust the bank to protect the safe deposit box. So you can create redundancy around that.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Yeah.
And then since you have the safe deposit box key, you don't really have to trust final message that much. If we don't send it, it's still in the safe deposit box.
Yeah. So you could keep. Yeah.
This is nice redundancy.
Redundancies here, man. Redundancies are important. And again, it seems to be getting easier and more robust, which is beautiful to see. I mean, in the last year alone, like multi-sigs, like blown up, Unchained wrote a sponsored post on Bitcoin Magazine earlier this week about 2020 being the year of multi-sig, and it seems like that's coming together. PSBT coming out, that seems to be blowing up more.
Mobile fucking mixing.
Mobile mixing is here.
Dude, I am so bullish on this fucking, like, I've been playing with this Whirlpool app, the Samurai wallet app on the phone with the Whirlpool built in, for 3 weeks now. And now anyone who downloads it from like Google Play or their GitLab gets it.
Yeah. And I think
it's massive.
And I think people are waking up that it's important. I saw somebody tweeting at Stefan and Samurai Wallet after they listened to his episode. I think it was Andrew DiMarcangelo, who does not like my Pika. Get over it, Andrew. He bought a Raspberry Pi and a bunch of stuff.
He bought an Android phone.
An Android phone. The
iPhone users have to all buy Android phones. He bought the...
When iOS app.
Never happening. It's never going to happen.
But, no, it seems like...
You should have a debit. I think it makes more sense, especially if you plan on keeping your wallet online and remixing all the time. Like, it makes sense to have a dedicated phone.
Yeah, it makes sense, probably.
Like, even if you're an Android user, like, use the last phone you had or whatever.
Yeah, but the point I'm trying to get at is, as it gets easier, it seems that people are... stepping out and actually getting the stuff in their hands and using it. It's just going to take time. And time is
slow passing. And steady.
Slow and steady. Tortoise in the hare here. The tortoise is going to win this game in the long run. You mentioned Cold Card in that last bit. less than a week, or exactly a week after their last update, they released version 3.1.2 today. This enhances... couple enhancements, new setting to enable a scrambled numeric keypad during PIN login, which is pretty cool. Press 4 when viewing a payment address triggered by USB command to see the QR code on screen. It's for the MK3 only. You can enter non-zero account numbers when exporting wallet files for Electrum and Bitcoin Core. This makes importing seeds from other systems easier and safer. Dims the display when entering HSM mode, because it has to be on at all times, so it's just a...
Correct.
Yeah.
It has like a little bar showing that it's active, and it shows how many transactions have been sent.
Yeah, and then they fixed a few bugs. Trust PSBT setting for multi-sig wallets was being ignored. Thanks to Casa HODL for reporting this. Shout out Casa.
Casa is about to add Cold Card.
XPub values volunteered in the global section of a PSBT for a single signer file would cause errors, but okay, multi-sig Cold Card is now able to handle this, although it doesn't need them. And then 3.1.1 had a bug which broke the new non-zero count export feature, so they fixed that and rush pushed 3.1.2. So shout out to Rodolfo and team. Is Rodolfo,
what happened in 3.1.2?
3.1.1 had a bug which broke the new non-zero account export feature.
Oh, I missed that. That was like one of the main features that 3.1.1 added. Okay, well, great. I'm glad they released a fix real quick.
Yes. And then talking about focus is what I talked about in the bend today. It seems that Square's focus on Bitcoin only is paying off. They had another...
Disclosure there, spot.
Disclaimer.
Dude, your fucking disclosure at the top of the bent was very nice.
Yeah, as you may be aware, Freaks Cash App is a sponsor of this rag and TFTC's podcast. However, your Uncle Marty's thoughts are his own. Make sure you use the code STACKINGSATS when you download the app if you haven't already.
That's the disclosure I expect from Trace every time he FUDs private Bitcoin usage.
I own a shit ton of Mibblewimble coin.
Exactly.
But I was disclosing because I was about to write about Square, because I did write about Square. And again, This just so happened to be the week that Cash App had the ad in the newsletter, but it wasn't paid content. I can promise you that it is genuine interest from your boy, Uncle Marty here.
I think we're more critical of our sponsors than anyone else.
I agree too. But yeah, Cash App had a banger of a fourth quarter. Their growth year on year from fourth quarter 2018, their sales were up 240%, which is pretty huge. Their Bitcoin volume last quarter in sales, according to the block, which used average price to estimate, so this could be lower.
It's extrapolated data, right?
Yeah, it's with the Bitcoin volumes, I'm pretty sure. The block is extrapolating 22,272 Bitcoin in volume last month, which is a considerable amount of the block rewards that were, the block subsidies that were distributed. Don't forget, people are selling too as well. So it's something to take into consideration.
People actually selling Cash App?
I don't know. I haven't.
Freaks, if you sold on Cash App, slap yourself.
Got to stack those sats.
It's a one-way street.
Yeah. For me. And so, like, the first half of the event, like, I think the focus on Bitcoin is really paying off. And Jack came out, and he was quoted in the Blocks article. They had their earnings call yesterday. Like, he truly believes in Bitcoin and Square, and their initiatives in Cash App are going to work towards making Bitcoin more open. And they truly see it as something that's going to democratize finance across the world, not just here in the U.S. I think at the same time, I fucked this up in the email. I said Coinbase's Bitcoin sales fell by 40%. That's not true, freaks. The growth rate of their Bitcoin sales fell by 40%.
Fake news, man.
Fake news. And that was a fuck up. That's on me. That's on me. Bad fuck up there. But still, the point remains. It looks like...
Coinbase still dwarfs Cash App, right?
Yeah, I believe so. But the growth rate's falling, and I think those who have more focus and Bitcoin only are going to reap the benefits of focus in the long term, where if somebody goes to Coinbase now, they go and they see 27 coins. Like, what the fuck do I buy? They're a little bamboozled, and it's a bit confusing, and I think from a UX, from an ethical perspective, what Cash App is doing, just offering Bitcoin and educating them about Bitcoin, their users about Bitcoin, is the most advantageous way to go.
And a lot of people already have it installed too, which is fucking fantastic. It's outpaced Venmo. Ark Invest recently released a report that said their growth is outpacing Venmo now. I think their growth was outpacing, but their actually monthly active users is fully outpaced them now.
And Cash App is like serves people like the people who need it most, like in the inner cities and stuff like that. It does. I mean, that's how it started. And that's where it's popular.
It's still like,
it's in all the rap songs as well.
It's not Bitcoin, you know?
What do you mean?
Like, it still, you know, requires like people who can't open bank accounts probably can't open Cash App account either.
Yeah. You can get your checks deposited right to it.
But like, why can't they open a bank account? Probably because of like banking regulation and stuff like that, right?
I don't know.
It definitely makes it easier for them to open one if they were already qualified to open a bank account.
Yes.
The other thing is our boy Miles Suter teased that they're going to make sats
the standard.
Fuck
baby.
Yes. Fuck yes. So you can display in sats, and they're going to add an auto buy feature. Which is fucking awesome. We love auto buys here. You just, because then you don't have to, you know, you freaks know how much trouble we have, or at least I have, at staying humble. You don't have to stay humble. You can just set your humility, and then it just, you set it and forget it, and you just stay humble, stack sats all the time.
It's just really just setting the stack sats part of it. This doesn't really dictate whether or not you're humble.
Well, if you just ignore the app from that point, then it's much easier to stay humble. You're not like, you don't think about the price or anything like that. It's just your weekly buy, just every week, just goes through.
Yeah,
it does make the humble part a little bit easier.
Yeah, so Miles teased that. I retweeted it and put it in the bent too. He had a screenshot of his phone where he received 200 and some odd thousand sats from an auto buy. So that's two boxes checked off your list there. What do we have left?
Slow and steady.
We have, I know we have merchants, Square merchants accepting Bitcoin and keeping it.
Oh yeah. And then I wanted a sats back boost. We'll see if we get that.
That seems pretty plausible.
Yeah. Sats back boost. You spend fiat, you stack sats. That's what I want. And then Lightning integration would be dope, but I didn't put it on the checklist because I didn't think they'd get through the checklist so quickly.
hey, don't sleep on Cash App, all right?
And then, like, while we're just sending out feature requests, like a completely unrealistic feature request that I would love is if they just coin joined all user funds.
Hey, you heard us. Just coin join everything, you know? Help us get to that that threshold level where nothing is considered taint because everything is tainted.
Fuck yes.
And taint is subjective. It's a slur.
Make every spend a coin join.
Yes, we should get to that. This is something I threw on the list right before Matt strolled over here. The team at SureBits, Chris Stewart, I don't want to mess up Ben's name. Ben Cameron, right?
Oh, I have no idea.
Give me a second here.
Because you threw it on right before we came on.
Ben the Carman.
Our boy Ben.
Yeah, our boy Ben. I don't want to mess up his name. At Ben the Carman on Twitter. He's at SureBits. A bunch of other people are obviously working there as well. But they've been doing a lot of incredible work. I wanted to highlight them. They've been doing a lot of work to, number one, educate Bitcoin users, and then two, pushing the tech forward. And it's, to me at least, extremely impressive, especially what they're doing with discrete log contracts right now. They just released a demonstration of an implementation of discrete log contracts that they're working on. And basically this would allow individuals to enter smart contract agreements and bet on stuff and other things, outcomes of events. And the example they used was Alice and Bob betting on whether or not the price would be over $10,000 at the end of the day. And basically the way it works, there's some trade-offs with these discrete log contracts, specifically the one that SureBits is working on. There is an element of trust. Before we get to the trust element, the way it works is Alice and Bob put up sats in a DLC, and basically once the event, the block height of the event is over, an oracle, that's where you have to trust, will basically distribute the funds based on the outcome of the event. So it seems like sophisticated smart contracts are coming to Bitcoin. And then on top of that, so this is Trad Dija. He basically presented this. Is that the right word? He created this. Trad Dija.
Oh, I'm not
from
sure.
MIT. He created discrete lock on, or wrote the paper on this implementation. It could be used on any blockchain. SureBits is working on it for Bitcoin specifically, and basically it is a like smart contracts on Ethereum, for example, are very data intensive, and then they're not as private as they can be. Discrete log contracts allow you to be less data intensive and more private. So when you're actually engaging in a DLC, the oracle doesn't even know what you're betting on or that you are betting on something. They're just providing the data, and that's where the trust element comes in.
The Oracle's just reporting what happened in real life.
Exactly. They have a five blog post series on this. And so like any Oracle scheme, we're going to need to trust, an Oracle. However, the DLC scheme provides us with a lot of nice, often built in trust mitigation. Firstly, the Oracle does not know that you or your contract exist. Second, you can and should add a time locked refund, of your CET, which stands for contract execution.
This is like way over our heads.
Transactions, yes. In case Oracle becomes unresponsive, and again.
The key thing here is that two parties can make a bet on chain, right?
Yes.
Where and it has a trusted third party that's reporting the outcome of the bet.
Yes, and if the trusted third party
doesn't have control of the funds and can't steal the funds.
They don't have control of the funds, but they could fuck up the data. And if they do fuck up the data, it's forever cryptographically
fucked up
on the chain. And it's a reputation game. So you would never use that.
And they could also, theoretically, the Oracle could be one side of the bet.
Well, that's the beauty of it. Like the Oracle, the way this is set up, the Oracle doesn't know that you're engaging in a bet. So I would go to you directly and be like, hey, let's create a DLC. I wouldn't be like, on the internet, let's create a random one, and the Oracle would find it and create it with me. I think it's for people who like want to bet one-on-one with each other.
Right, but the Oracle could be a part of the bet, and the other party wouldn't know.
I think that, possibly. But I think this is more geared towards people who...
Do people know who the other party is that they're making a bet in this situation? Or are they like posting online, like, I, you know, think Bitcoin will be over 10,000?
I think it'd be either or.
So if you do and my side, then you don't know if the person who receives, who's on the other side of the bet is... This is what Augur tried to solve, was like this Oracle problem. Where like you have to, at the end of the day, you have to rely on a trusted third party to act in good faith, or like based on a reputation system, which is basically where we're at with like betting sites and stuff, right? Like if a betting site reported that the Packers won when the Packers really lost, then no one would ever use that betting site. Like that would fucking suck. So it becomes like a reputation game.
Yeah. So a reputation game where lying is punishable.
How is it punishable?
And telling the truth is rewarded, since the Oracle can be anonymously paid for their service.
So is there like a bond in place or something? Is there a security deposit the Oracle is putting in?
No, the Oracle is not putting in any money. They're just signing a signature that says, hey, this is what happened at this point in time. But the people engaging in the contract could potentially basically tip the Oracle.
The cool thing about Augur is basically they have like multiple Oracles. And then if you like report it incorrectly and the majority reports it the other way and you report it the other way from the majority, you're in the minority of how you report it, then it assumes you were wrong and you're lying. And then it just immediately slashes your funds. Like takes away. That's like the main mechanism for how they tried to solve this issue.
Yeah. Well, you freaks are listening to two assholes trying to describe something they don't completely understand.
On the fly.
I've reached out to Short Bits. We're going to get them on the podcast.
Thank you. Let's do that. I appreciate that.
And they'll explain it more clearly than we are right now.
And also, like, yeah, I'm going to also look into it this week.
Yeah.
Because you kind of just dropped on me like half an hour ago.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. That's good. I'm glad we covered it.
No, that's the thing, though. Like, Short Bits, I've known Chris for a while. I met him at Consensus a couple years ago. He comes to town for BitDevs every once in a while. He's the one leading the Chicago BitDevs. And he's had this idea and has been bringing it to fruition for years now. And it's Short Bits. The team is like really heads down. They don't pump their shit too much. They just get shit done.
We'll pump the shit.
Yeah. We're here to pump Short Bits shit. Go check it out. Shortbits.com.
Hopefully we'll do a more informed pump next week.
Yes. What else do we got here? We're moving on to macros. Oh, Noddle Day. Noddle Day is March 24th in San Francisco. The Noddle team is throwing an event. They're going to have a dinner, I believe, right?
There'll be food and drink, and we have a lot of good speakers coming. I'm running the show. I'm going to be the MC. It's my first MC duty, if you don't count the Citadel workshops.
And this is one thing Escuedo and I have been talking about. Escuedo, I'm sorry. I have not brought this up until now, but... We want to do, in conjunction with Noddle, a Noddle giveaway to somebody.
We've been talking about this for months.
We have been talking about this for months. We'd like to, but we want you freaks to help us decide who we should give it to. And the idea is that we give it to somebody in the public eye who's interested in Bitcoin and may want to learn more.
Like a non-pleb.
Yeah, non-pleb who's got a platform that could help boost Bitcoin and basically somebody who's showing interest in who you think we should get a Noddle in the hands of so they can toy around with it and get to know Bitcoin a little bit more intimately.
Like people like Joe Kern on CNBC.
Yeah, Guy Dami or other people. Russell Kung.
So if you have any ideas, drop that in the comments.
Yes.
On Twitter.
Maybe Michelle Phan or something like that.
So Noddle Day, we're doing that March 24th in San Francisco before Bitcoin 2020. So if you're going to Bitcoin 2020, consider coming to the Noddle Day. It's going to be a lot of fun. And it's a great price. It's one sat per ticket. So,
oh wow,
we're making sats the standard in more ways than one.
That might be the lowest ticket price I've ever heard.
Best deal in Bitcoin. I'm not sure if they're accepting on-chain payments, but I think it'd be pretty funny if people paid like 400 sats to send one sat. But I'm not sure if they are. No.
Not recommended. Just use Lightning. This is pretty fucked. I didn't know this until you sent me the link today. There was a Wi-Fi flaw exposed, and billions of devices are...
Including iPhones and iPads, which are probably the big ones.
iPhones, iPads, Android...
Asus routers.
Well, that's what they're saying. The routers are the biggest problem because people usually don't update their
no
routers.
No one updates their routers. Update your routers, freaks.
Yeah.
Buy a new one. It's been sitting there for 7 years. Buy a new one.
Yeah. So it's, yeah. So iPhones, iPads, Macs, Amazon Echoes, Kindles, Android devices, Raspberry Pi 3s, and Wi-Fi routers from Asus in Hawaii.
It's pretty bad.
Very bad. Apparently,
they can break.
All the handheld devices have, all devices have pushed patches, but again, not
someone,
many people.
Basically, someone who was within range of your Wi-Fi could intercept the communication between device and router and break the encryption and see everything.
Yes.
So this is like another example of why, for important things, you should be using
dedicated hardware,
like hardwired connection, not Wi-Fi. Yeah, this is why the Noddle doesn't come with Wi-Fi out of the box.
Yeah, you're sending messages across.
Connected to Ethernet. All important stuff should be connected directly to Ethernet. You should be updating your router all the time. But like in this case...
How do you update your router?
In this case, like imagine I update my router all the time.
How do you do it? You have to go to like
your... You have to go into your router settings. It depends what router you have. But the thing is, you've already lost if you're using your internet service provider's router, which is what you're using, right?
Most likely.
Yeah. So like Verizon or whoever your internet service provider is updating your router for you. I think they do it relatively automatic. But you should check your router settings anyway. But regardless, Verizon or whoever your internet service provider is, when you allow them to use your router, they just are running all this shit in there and it's not a good thing. So you should try and get an independent router. But like even in this case, like this was iPhones, right? So you went to Starbucks and your iPhone was connected or whatever.
How many people are exploiting this, do you think?
Well, all the Apple devices were all patched in October.
I know, but like the attack is out there, but like how many hackers exploiting this do you think there are?
Look, and they have to be in range of your Wi-Fi. You know, this is why it's nice to have like a Citadel in the woods, you know, because they have to like drive onto your property to get access to your Wi-Fi.
That was another one where you almost ratioed me this week.
Dude, your bent this week was the best explanation of my Citadel theory that I've ever read.
The strong towns?
Yeah. You call it localism. I call it citadels.
I know.
That's what it is.
You're turning me on citadels a little bit. I just don't like the citadel version of Mad Max. That's like the citadel I go to first.
No, it doesn't. You don't have to be. See, now you're being like Noriel and Trace about it.
I'm sorry.
You know?
I'm sorry.
We don't have to take it to the extreme.
I'm sorry. We're not going to be just like throwing water down on the masses.
Well, like some people use the public utility water pump and some people will have better water, you know, like that's the unfortunate reality of where we're going.
Yeah, that's I'm actually reaching out to Chuck Marone, who wrote Strong Towns, and that was the subject of that bent, was a section of that book. What was it exactly? Oh, the metaphor of, do you want an economy? It's what we've been talking about a lot on this podcast. Growth at all costs doesn't make sense to me. Number one, you're going to destroy the earth in the process at some point. And number two, like nothing just grows forever. It's just in nature. It doesn't make much sense, unless you're trying to destroy something. So the, analogy that was proposed by a economist, Tomas, I forget his last name, but it's basically, do you want to be, an economy that's able to stand on its own 2 feet or forced to ride a bike? And we are definitely on an economy that's forced to ride a bike. When you're on a bike, you are forced to move forward at all times and keep going. You don't have the ability to stop, recalibrate, and sort of course correct with your decisions. You have to keep growth going or everything collapses. If you stop pedaling the bike, you're going to fall over. You want an economy that is more like a person standing on their feet. They're able to stop, look around, figure out where they messed up, and they don't have to grow at all costs. You can have a couple of years where growth is stagnant or even falls a little bit, and that may be okay.
I want to take a moment to read Marty's eloquent explanation of Citadel theory. This may actually be the only way out of the tyranny of the modern growth at all costs mindset. Incremental bottom-up changes from local governments that make the conscious decision to take agency over their futures. If small towns, municipalities, and cities, but let's call them citadels, had the balls to opt out and take their destiny into their own hands, they would take incremental steps to break away from the tyranny of the bike and stand on their own 2 feet.
I like that. Thank you.
This is the best explanation of citadels that I've ever read.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, unintentional. I didn't know I was describing citadels, but it seems like I may be. How do we do that, though? How do we, like, get back localism? It is a decision that you have to make, like, at a township level. Thank
you. One step at a time. You know, for these small communities to be able to access a global financial system without permission is a huge step forward in that regard. One of the interesting things here is, like, I see this move to localism, but I don't see it as, like, old school localism, because I think, you know, with global communications and Bitcoin, a global financial network, that both don't require permission or are, permission resistant, I guess, if you want to call them.
Permission-less.
We could have these small local economies that are connected to the global sphere without having that, like, nation state in between.
Yeah, without having capital controls possible.
But they're still, like, trading with other local municipalities or citadels, we could call them.
Yeah, and there's no, again, you can't stop the flow of money or that trade. You'd have to physically stop the flow of that trade, but then get into a whole other can of worms.
Marty, we dropped like $1,500 this week. Why am I in such a good mood?
I don't know. I'm always in a good mood when it comes to Bitcoin. Were blocks produced?
Blocks were produced.
Okay.
On an average of 10 minutes, 0.1 second, right?
10 minutes and 1 second. So like almost in line with Satoshi's vision. Satoshi's real vision.
Satoshi's vision.
Yeah, I'm happy this week too. I'm happy this week because I experimented with a lot of Bitcoin stuff. It was a good Bitcoin experiment week for you, boy. Feels good to get your hands dirty. And again, practice does make perfect. It makes you more comfortable with this stuff. It is daunting at times, but don't be afraid to get your hands dirty.
Get your hands fucking dirty. It's the only way to learn.
That's true. Last topic, we're going to end on some macro and coronavirus talk. Yesterday's bent.
And we got to talk about ProgPow, too. Cause
that was ProgPow. Matt put it in the list, ProgPow, LOL. Let's talk about ProgPow first, then we'll get a macro.
What is ProgPow?
It is a initiative to change the mining algorithm for Ethereum to make it ASIC resistant, I believe.
Right. And the theory is that they're scared that miners aren't cool with proof of stake, which they aren't. So if we fork them out now, then they can't do shenanigans later.
Yes.
So I have like a bunch of takes on this.
There's so many takes. Hey, I thought Ethereum was created to solve the governance problem.
It was clearly, it seems like a more of a clusterfuck than Bitcoin. At least like Bitcoin is like pure anarchy.
Bitcoin is upfront with the trade-offs. Like, own this.
In this case, it seemed like ProgPow had been shelved like 3 months ago, 4 months ago. And then all of a sudden there was a dev call and the devs and Vitalik and stuff were just like, we're going to do ProgPow now. Like all the major stakeholders. Like I'm sure they got Lubin on the line. Lubin was like, I'm down for ProgPow. And like they're going to make it happen.
This was last Friday, right?
Yeah. And if people don't run nodes and there's not this culture of pushing back and verifying, then they're going to always be able to steamroll these hard fork changes. But the weird thing to me is there's two weird things. The first thing is every time a chain, first of all, ASICs are fucking awesome. Proof of work is fucking awesome. Paul, you and Paul talked about this last week. You know, proof of work, distributed proof of work is the innovation here. And every time you're freaking out your miners. Your miners are putting investment. We saw Bitcoin's hash rate. A shit ton
of money.
Bitcoin's hash rate keeps going up. Ethereum's has flatlined. And the reason is because no one wants to spend money on this shit when they're afraid that at any moment their ASICs could get
bricked.
Or finally Ethereum will move to proof of stake and then they'll really be bricked, right? So they're not going to put investment in. And even if for some reason the ProgPow doesn't go through, just discussing it delays research and development and investment costs and all this stuff. Like no one's putting money in right now. Cause imagine if you were researching an Ethereum ASIC right now. And then like in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, they fork them out. And then the last thing is like, that's the dumbest fucking reason ever to do it. Because if miners are going to protest the move to proof of stake, why wouldn't they protest the move to ProgPow? Like, if they're going to do a contentious fork, they'll do it now.
Right. Yeah, it's...
It doesn't make any sense. There's no logic here.
Well, Does that surprise you?
It doesn't surprise me.
The history of Ethereum has proven that logic gets thrown out the door sometimes. And yeah, like you said, there are multiple stakeholders in these systems. That's what I think Ethereum discounts a lot. Like miners are, like you said, putting a lot of capital into this stuff, a lot of blood, sweat, money, and energy into this. And you can't have unknowns. And like with ProgPal and the amorphous transition to proof of stake, that's what they've created. Like you said, their hash rate is flatlined, but it's still 40% or 30 to 40% below its all-time high. So it's flatlined after falling precipitously.
Yeah, flatline was being generous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, Paul, and speaking on proof of stake, go check out the episode I had with Paul Stork earlier this week where we talk about proof of stake versus proof of work. And it's funny, Paul, in 2014, like on his blog, had conversations with Vitalik, who's the other guy, Vlad, and Jaquan, who may have gone crazy this week, the Definity guy. And they basically agreed with him that proof of stake probably wasn't advantageous, and yet they're still going
And this going was before the Ethereum presale even happened.
Yeah, yeah. Know your history, folks.
I really enjoyed the prediction market aspect of your episode with Paul.
Yeah, it's towards the end.
If we had a coronavirus prediction market,
what do you think
people would have better information instead of everyone like just not panicking and then just panicking in like a matter of like 3 days?
Yeah. What are your thoughts on drive chains? A lot of it's a very contentious topic for a lot of people.
My understanding is it doesn't require a fork, right?
It's a soft fork. Yeah. There's BIPs out for it. BIPs 300 and 301, I believe. It's on his website.
Yeah, no, I don't have an opinion on it really. But miners can steal funds and stuff like that.
Yeah, right, but is the issue. If you listen to the episode, Paul,
there's like a lockup or something, right?
Yeah, there's a 3 to 6 month lockup, which is pretty long period of time.
Let me put it this way. I thought it was vaporware until I listened to your most recent episode, and then he was like, he made some like compelling cases towards it being.
Well, the
decent trade-off, you know?
Yeah, and the reason I brought him on is because of that thread I had about Jevons Paradox and the fee market. And it seems that if dry chains or similar side chains become a thing, they could be very supportive to a fee market in the future. So definitely go listen to that episode. It's a long one. Paul can talk. I think I talked for like 5 minutes in that episode.
Were you in the episode? I missed that part. It was a great episode.
I was happy, Paul, to let him ramble. He's, again, and like I said in the tweet when I sent out the episode, he thinks different. I like that. He's a unique thinker in this space. He doesn't fall into any bucket that I can think of.
But anyway, I want a coronavirus prediction market. Is that too much to ask, Marty?
FTX, what would the prediction be? How many deaths?
Yeah, you do like, there'll be 20,000 deaths in America due to coronavirus. Yes or no?
I'm still so fucking
As
confused.
As of September 1 or something.
I'm so confused.
What do you think, Marty? Do you think there'll be more than 20,000 deaths or less than 20,000 deaths in the United States?
Well, even no. We don't
Should
even
we
have,
do a mini prediction market?
Don't we have like 500 test kits in the States?
I'll take the under.
I'm going to take the under too.
Oh, you're going to take the under too? You can't take the under. Then we don't have a prediction market. Then we just have two buddies agreeing. What do you think about 10,000 deaths? Do you think there'll be more than 10,000 deaths in the United States?
I don't know, man. I'm so fucking confused.
What level? But see, this is where prediction markets are really useful, right? Because like, what are we looking at here? Meanwhile, you have like the S&P is just fucking falling off a complete fucking cliff over the last 3 days. Bitcoin seems to have dropped with it. Are sats still my safe haven?
Yes. Bitcoin's non-correlated.
But it's been kind of correlated with the S&P recently.
Yeah. Yeah, it's confusing.
But this is what I kind of envisioned in a crisis.
So let's not focus on coronavirus right now. I think coronavirus is going to be a cop-out for the degradation of an economy that would have happened anyway. So
House of Cards.
Yes. And I wrote about this yesterday in the Bent. If you look at subprime markets, they are starting to falter again. So smaller banks... issuing credit cards, which is usually to subprime borrowers, their delinquency rates, so people have not paid back their credit cards in over 3 months and 90 plus days, is up at 7% right now. Right before the crisis, it was at about 5% and 6% It peaked at 6% in 2009. So we're above the Great Recession crisis level of subprime credit card delinquency rates. And then since the Great Recession, auto loans have been going through the roof. They were at about auto loan delinquency rates, excuse me, have been going through the roof. In Q4 2010, they were at about $38 billion worth of auto loans were delinquent by 90 plus days. Today, it's $66 billion. Percentage-wise, that's about 5% of all auto loans, which is right where it was in Q3 2009. So the subprime markets
are... What happened in 2009?
Everything went to shit, man. So like we're at in the subprime market, and that's what caused 2009. It was a subprime market. It was a subprime debt crisis, right? The MBS, the mortgage-backed securities, all the shitty mortgages within those products died first, and they brought everything down with it. So it seems like subprime markets are getting pretty frothy again. And then on top of that, another stat, which is pretty freaky, the amount of CEOs that are leaving their companies in the last few months has been increasing significantly, which signals to me that people are trying to get out before the fall.
So, Marty, the S&P is currently trading at 3,038.
What was the high, 36?
The high was, like, the all-time high?
Yeah, like a couple months ago.
3,373. And now it's at 3,038.
Oh, 3,038.
Okay, so we've, like, erased, like, 6 months again. So we're in, like, November 2019 right now.
Yes.
September 1, are we above or below 3,000? Because here, this is my framing.
So here's my thought. It's, and this has been something that's been true for the last decade. Like, you never want to try to call a top because the Fed will always come in and prop up markets. But with that being said, that is consensus right now. Everybody and their mother is confident that the Fed is going to step in and save these markets. And that alone, that heuristic... Yes, and that alone, the fact that everybody thinks that is going to happen and that's going to save the markets makes me want to be a contrarian and call it top. Like, there's no way that everybody can believe this and it be true.
I've called the top for the last 5 years,
but it's never, the consensus has never been, and the consensus is the Fed will step in and prop up markets. That used to be taboo. If you would even, that was like Zero Hedge stuff. Like, Zero Hedge was saying this years ago, and they get fucking lambasted for it. Now you have everybody and their mother on CNBC, Bloomberg, FinTwit, wherever, saying it's a foregone conclusion that the Fed will step in and prop up
so
markets.
So September 1st, you think it'll be under 3,000?
I'm going to go below. I think we're going to have a big correction.
You want to put $50 on it?
I'll put $50.
Okay. Let's shake. We'll shake. We just shake. We just shook.
Murad, you still owe us dinner.
That's like a prediction market. He owes two dinners.
No, just one.
One dinner?
Just one dinner.
Just yeah, just me. One dinner. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're listening, Murad.
That was like a $3,000 call too, right, but on Bitcoin.
September 1st, it'll be below 3,078?
3,000.
Okay. Below 3,000. All right. Fuck.
Because I'm like, so I've just been a bear, like an equity bear for like the last 5 years, 6 years, and like a Bitcoin bull. So I'm like, is this my bearish bias showing? But it does seem like,
I mean, if you're looking
at... We could be gearing up here for a big one.
Yeah. I mean, again, looking at the subprime markets, and the CEOs jumping ship, like, they have the most intimate knowledge of what's going on.
That graph you posted today really says it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, is this, like, a usual amount of CEOs dropping out? Like, are we just looking for it, you know, confirm our bias?
No. It is more, like, last month alone, 231 stepped down. You had MasterCard, MasterCard... Salesforce,
Disney, right?
Disney, L Brands, a bunch of other companies stepped down within recent weeks, which is weird. It seems like they're cashing out at the top. And it's all, like I said in the bent that I'm referencing right now, it's all fucking financial engineering game. Like, all this is enabled by financial engineering, lowering the barrier to entry to credit for the sake of economic growth. You get the subprime borrowers in, you give them lines of credit, and then when prices get out of their reach and they can't pay off, they're going to default. It's just going to fucking happen. But because you want the show to go on, because we're on a bike and we need growth to fucking continue, you're going to lower your standards and give out some bad credit, which has been happening. You're going to allow massive buybacks by these CEOs of their company stocks so they can make it seem like their companies are doing better than they actually are, but they're really just doing a financial engineering game to work their earnings per share up. It's not really actual growth. It's a fucking accounting game. And on top of that, you had the Fed printing money and lowering interest rates to keep all these failing companies afloat instead of letting the herd get culled.
Counterpoint, scams pump the hardest.
Well, yeah, we were, yeah. Like, the scams, like, is Tesla a scam? Tesla pumped pretty hard.
Yep, yeah, I'm not calling it necessarily a scam, but it's definitely going to trend to zero in Bitcoin terms long term.
And yeah, I ended it with, this is also fucked, but...
So where do you put your money,
Marty? I just did. I already shook your hand. I'm saying below 3,000 in September. I could definitely be wrong, though. No, I have been wrong, like, in the past.
Where do Americans put their money? Where do global citizens put their money if they're worried about this kind of...
I don't want to say Bitcoin, because honestly, like, if there's people out there who are ever overextended in Bitcoin, they're going to sell that shit to survive if shit does hit
the fan. Well, I think that's what we've seen in the last couple of days.
Yeah.
Which is like a liquidity crunch. Yeah. But the way I envision any Bitcoin handling any kind of crises, especially since it's a relatively liquid, global, 24/7 traded asset, is that first you will see it dip with everything else, and then it will rise through the ashes as the true safe haven it is.
This is actually a good point. And we didn't have it on the list, maybe should have. Al Jazeera was reporting from Lebanon that a lot of Lebanese citizens are turning to Bitcoin as their banking system is failing them. Banks are shutting down and not allowing people to get out as much money as they should be able to. This has been going on for months now. And I mean, this is anecdotal. This one Al Jazeera story interviewing Lebanese people on the ground who are apparently turning to Bitcoin. And that is true. Maybe people will turn to Bitcoin. I don't know.
Well, there's like an Argentinian who posted, who was like, we're more concerned about our next currency devaluation than coronavirus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, God bless you, Argentinians. I'm sorry. Government prints or issues 100-year fucking bonds, and they default on them within like 2 years.
So should we be panicking about coronavirus?
I think coronavirus is a scapegoat for the financial
crisis. But regardless
if
it's a scapegoat, should we be...
No, stay healthy. Wash your hands. Like...
I think one thing people don't talk about enough is
most
like
people are dying or like over 50, I believe.
Get like a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
It's like important. Don't
do your push-ups. Like,
not your, medical advice. We're not doctors.
Definitely not doctors, but.
But you should. One of the reasons, like, I haven't panicked. Well,
the high end of the projections are 8 million people will die. That's 0.1% of the world. Like, you have a 0.1% chance of dying.
No, I think it's higher than that.
What is it?
I don't know. Twitter like throws around crazy. Did you see Balaji's tweet the other day? He was like, this is going to be worse than 9/11.
That was a take and a half.
That was some questionable.
The only
tweet.
Way it could be worse than 9/11 is they use it as a crutch to institute like draconian measures like
that
the Patriot
might happen.
Act, right?
Like Patriot Act. Like, yeah. Be vigilant. I could see them banning cash. Yeah. Cash transfers,
but
coronavirus.
Comparing deaths from the coronavirus to deaths from 9/11 is a pretty...
That's pretty fucked, right?
Yeah, it's a weak take. I'm not going to co-sign that take.
It was a questionable take. I have a prepper strain in me, but like a prepper living in a city. So like I kind of, you know, I know when I move out of the city, I'm going to go full on mode. But like people should have at any time, they should be prepared for, you know, 2 weeks, that kind of thing. And then you don't panic in these situations and you don't freak the fuck out. Just basic things, you know.
Yeah, no, I have 2 weeks supply of food in my freezer, if need be. I did do a little prepping this week because I'm not worried about the coronavirus. I'm worried about people freaking out about the coronavirus.
People are guaranteed to freak out. That's basically my conclusion, is even if the virus isn't bad, people are already fucking panicking.
Yeah.
It turns really quick. And we can add this to the list of things that weren't priced in correctly, right? So,
right.
It's not like all of a sudden, like something massively changed over the last 3 days that just led to huge falls in the S&P, right?
I'm pissed at the CDC. They came out like, and just like, it seemed like they were trying to incite panic, like prepare. Well, they probably have to be over cautious. But still, like their announcement.
They haven't
like,
been overcautious though, because they haven't, like, they're not releasing testing kits and shit.
Yeah, and they're not like, I saw a tweet like individual hospitals and doctors like had to ask permission from the FDA to create their own testing kits. Like, that's fucked. This shit. Don't ask permission. Just fucking do it.
Like, our government has grown very big and very inept. And this is one of the reasons why I'm attracted to Bitcoin in the first place, right? Like, these are no surprises. These are things you should just expect. Yeah.
You see, 9/11 was the bad analogy. You should have used Katrina. It could be another Katrina where it
was Sandy.
Yeah. Or something like that.
If he wanted his New York related metaphors.
Yeah. I think Katrina was worse than Sandy, though.
Unless you were a New Yorker, then Sandy was worse.
I was here. I was actually still living in Chicago, but I was visiting my wife.
Katrina was definitely worse. I mean, Katrina hit a poor area, right?
Yeah.
If you hit a rich area, you do more notional damage, but the recovery is easier because there's more money.
Yes. Yeah, but Katrina showed, like, yeah, America was not ready for that. FEMA's inept.
And then, like,
you see
Trump put, like, Mike Pence in charge of coronavirus, and he doesn't even believe in science and shit. Like, he oversaw, like, the biggest, like,
AIDS epidemic in Indiana.
In, like, modern history.
What the fuck?
And they put him in charge of it? Like, you kidding me, man? I don't know.
Somebody responded to my Ben yesterday to respect the president. Because I called
Orange face something.
Or orange tinge president. Stocks are at all-time highs. Trust yourself, freaks.
But that didn't age well.
Right? No, it does piss me off. I mean, we have enough politician hate on this podcast. You freaks know how we feel about these people and these systems.
Like, will sats per dollar ever go under 10K again?
Yes, it will.
Obviously. I love that reverse like thought way of thinking of it.
I don't think we're staying under 10,000 forever.
Should we? Do you see like
we could have a prolonged grinding bear market?
Bitcoin Twitter.
That's what happened in 2015.
It's freaking out way more over this dump than I expected.
Yeah, the fact that Ryan Selkis is leaning in gives me a little.
What's a coronavirus?
Yeah,
coronavirus specialist.
Yeah,
there's a lot of coronavirus specialists in Bitcoin Twitter and crypto Twitter. It's amazing.
I tried to be one for like a week and then I noticed I don't know shit.
Yeah, no, you got to stay humble about it.
Yeah. And I've said this like on three episodes already. I don't know shit. I'm very confused.
Just be kind to people and be prepared for yourself and keep your eyes vigilant and don't panic.
Wash your hands. Do your push-ups.
Wash your hands a lot, supposedly. Yeah. It's like a thing.
Yeah.
And don't let them like take away our rights for some fear-mongering bullshit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And fuck you, Trace.
Yeah.
And mix your coins.
CoinJoin.
Run your node. Consider running a Lightning node over Tor.
Yeah.
Pump those numbers up.
If we want to get to localism, aka citadels, I think we need Bitcoin first. I think Bitcoin's the first step.
It's going to be really interesting. I just keep... Like, if it was up to me, this episode would just be like a Samurai Whirlpool launch party. Because I think... Like, this is going to be a big thing. Like, people are going to talk about it in, like, 20 years, 30 years. Like, where were you?
Where were you?
Yeah.
I was drinking Michter's with Matt Odell.
Fuck yes. Cheers.
Cheers, brother. All right, freaks. We're going to stop annoying you. That's all we got. Are we staying
humble? Stay humble, stack
sets. Are we staying humble? Yeah, we're staying
humble. Fuck yes. Stay humble all the time, guys.
Peace and love. Fuck you, Andrew.